This is Roland Chidiac Connects, a podcast about motivation and inspiration. Ever wonder what drives people to do what they do? Join me as I connect with a variety of people who have great stories to tell about what inspires them, ignites their passions, and leads them to make a difference in their work and the people around them. This is episode 47 of Roland Chidiac Connects, a podcast about motivation and inspiration. And on this episode, I'm really pleased to be able to talk with Mike Farwell. So Mike is what he calls himself a radio guy on his Twitter profile. Mike works as a broadcaster in Kitchener, Ontario, and I'm going to let him say a little bit more about that when I invite him on. But Mike does a lot more than just go on the radio. That's probably maybe what he's most known for in this area where we live in Kitchener, Waterloo, Cambridge, and beyond. But Mike also does this really cool thing in the month of May called Farwell for Hire in support of cystic fibrosis research. And I'm going to let him talk about that. I don't want to give it all away. I just kind of want to give you a flavor for Mike. He's also quite involved in the community, I would say. So aside from listening to him on the radio, connecting him to the OHL Kitchener Rangers, Mike does a lot in the community. So if I'm on Twitter or Facebook or just, reading about something that involves Kitchener, Waterloo, Cambridge, Mike's name will come up for a variety of reasons within the community, which is amazing. Mike Farwell, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks very much, Roland. I'm really happy to be here.
Oh, excellent. So I'm just going to briefly explain kind of how I know you, which is kind of a cool story. So like I said, you're on the radio. And aside from being on the radio, I was fortunate enough a few years ago to teach one of your nieces. And the big joke at the time was that your mom would make me more cookies than she'd make you. Your mom would send baked goods with your niece, and I enjoyed every morsel, I cannot lie.
You sound a lot like me in my youth, because my mom, acknowledging my bias up front, of course, but my mom is the greatest baker in the world, and I thoroughly enjoy, to this day, every morsel of what she bakes.
Well, I cannot argue with that, that's for sure. So I had the pleasure of meeting and getting to know your sister, your niece, your mom, and your dad. They'd come into school on special occasions to check things out. And I remember, so I'm thinking it was around 3 years ago, I heard about your Farwell for Hire, a campaign, I guess, is for lack of a better word. And I invited you into my classroom to read to my students. In exchange, I made a donation. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to be at school that day because my son got ill. And so I had to miss you reading to my students. But the supply teacher did take pictures, so I was really happy about that. And then ever since then, whenever I go to a Rangers game or whatever, I will tweet you because I can always see you up top in the press box. And the last time I went, my kids and I stayed after the game and we got to see you talk to some of the players. So you lead an exciting life and I'm looking forward to you telling us a little bit about that. So let's start with, your day job, what you do to like earn money and live your life.
Yeah, I think you described it, at least in my words, very well off the top. I refer to myself simply as a radio guy. And my living is made by doing a morning radio show on a country radio station, Country 106.7, here in Kitchener. Country1067.com, if anybody wants to give it a listen sometime. But I do the morning show on that radio station from 5 until 10 every morning. And then, as you mentioned, I also am the play-by-play voice of the Kitchener Rangers, which I broadcast on 570 News. Both radio stations I work for are owned by Rogers, the same company. And wherever the Kitchener Rangers go during their season, I go with them. So when they travel on the road to Sudbury and Sault Ste. Marie and North Bay and nearby Guelph. I hop on the bus and take the trip with the team. So I broadcast all 68 home and away games for the Kitchener Rangers. And then just to have a little bit more of a hand or a finger in the community, I write a weekly column for the Kitchener Post.
Mm-hmm. Does it ever, okay, well, it's kind of a loaded question, but is it still as exciting to do the play-by-play for the Rangers as it was when you first started?
Every day. Since I was a kid and kind of had this dream about getting into broadcasting someday, I thought about being a play-by-play announcer for a hockey team. And to be able to do it for my hometown hockey team, I was born and raised in Kitchener, so to do it for the Rangers is a real thrill for me. But the thing about it is, I'm a fan. I'm a fan of the game of hockey. I'm a fan of major junior hockey in Canada, the OHL, the QMJHL, the WHL. I love that game at that level. And so absolutely, it's exciting every time I get to put on that headset and call a game.
Have you, okay, so you've always wanted to be a broadcaster?
Yes. Yep.
And always radio, or did you imagine yourself like radio, TV, whatever? You just wanted to be doing that kind of work?
Always radio. Radio was the first medium that really captured my attention. I was absolutely fascinated by the sound coming out of this box in my house. I got my own little portable stereo system that I would carry around with me and as a kid. And always, it was always about the radio. I used to enter the radio contests. And what a thrill. I remember 3 years in a row winning a Father's Day contest on what was at the time called 570 Chime in Kitchener. And we got to go up to a place called Eaton Putt, where you could eat and play mini golf. And they also had this giant slide with red and white dividers on it. So some slides were red, some slides were white. And you had to sit in a burlap sack and go down to the bottom. And this was the greatest thing in the world to me. And 3 years in a row on 570 Chime, I won some Father's Day contest that allowed my dad and I to go to Eaton Putt for Father's Day.
Very cool. Did you study broadcasting here in town?
I did. I'm a graduate of Conestoga College. And actually, prior to that, I obtained my Bachelor of Arts degree in English from the University of Waterloo, because despite the fact that for as long as I can remember, I wanted to be a radio broadcaster, I didn't really think that was a real job. And my father was a teacher. And so I thought that's what people with real jobs do. They go to work every day in a jacket and tie. They carry a briefcase. And that's what real work is. So I actually studied to become a teacher, supplied for a year, and said, this is just not my cup of tea. I'm going to go back to school, pursue this broadcasting thing, and see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Now, what would you say, Mike, generally motivates you day to day?
That's a great question. What motivates me day to day? I guess I would say, I mean, I'm not sure even how conscious I am of it anymore, but I do find myself, particularly at this time of year, I do find myself thinking about how lucky I am to be living where I live in this great country of Canada, in this little section of it, if you want to talk relatively speaking, of 560,000 people in the region of Waterloo with a strong economy and lots going for it. And I just think by birth, I have become a very fortunate individual. And I think I think really that is my motivation for getting up and doing what I do every day. It's certainly not for the paycheck. I mean, don't get me wrong. I need it to live, but I would do what I do for free. I'm not motivated by the paycheck every 2 weeks. And I'm not motivated by, you know, sometimes walking into Tim Hortons and having people know who I am for the job that I do. I thoroughly enjoy the work, if you can actually call it work. And I just feel very fortunate to be able to do this work in my hometown and in this part of the world, quite frankly.
What's it like to have people come up to you if you're at Tim Hortons or out and about in the community? Like, does it happen often? And when it happens, what does it feel like?
It's very strange. I actually, just before we sat down, came from a friend's place whose daughters, now granted, they're very young. They're 9 years, 8 and 9 years old. But were over the moon that they thought, oh my gosh, this famous radio broadcaster is coming over to their house. Kids are one. But, you know, there's a very passionate fan base for the Kitchener Rangers in this community. So being associated at arm's length anyway with the hockey team means a lot. But I still find it incredibly weird. For me, you know, the people that deserve recognition and praise are the police officers and the first responders and the teachers. And I don't say that because I know what you do, and that was our first meeting, and even maybe because of what my father did. He was an educator for 30 plus years in this town. I do believe that educators play a critical role in our community. And I could list probably 10 more professions that I think are much more noteworthy, but it's the culture that we have, and it's the environment in which we exist today. And I accept it, but I still find it rather unsettling at times. I'm getting used to it. I've been doing this long enough that you kind of grow accustomed to it, but I find it very strange because all I do is talk on the radio.
Okay. I want to say something about that. First of all, I appreciate what you said about teachers and other people in our community, like the police officers and those people. I appreciate it. We appreciate it. But I have to tell you, I believe that what endears people to you is not just the fact that you're on the radio. It's your whole personality. Like, you're very approachable. You actually talk to people. You know what I mean? Like, you take the time. For example, when I asked you if you want to be on the podcast, you were all over it. There was none of this, you know, email me here and call me within this time frame or whatever. You're just like, yeah, let's make it happen. Let's do this. And even my kids, like when my kids saw you at the Rangers game, well, they see you every time because I say, hey, daddy's going to tweet Mike Farwell. And I guarantee you he'll respond. You always do. But even like, you know, I got two little kids and they're like, wow, that guy's talking to you, dad. And I'm like, yeah, because he's a normal person. He's on TV, he's on the radio, whatever. It's your personality. It's the way that you carry yourself. So, I mean, that's just my perspective. Your voice goes a long way, even though you're on the radio. I think it's more than that. And I think it's the story that you tell and the fact that you love this community so much. I'm not originally from this community, but there are a few people who stand out in this community since I've been here, and you're one of them. So props to you for that. And I think that's why it's really cool that people like to connect with you. And I think it's kind of weird that you've been doing this long enough that for you, it's still kind of strange that people will approach you and talk to you because you're on the radio or that you're connected with the Rangers.
Yeah, sometimes I have to remind myself what it's like for the other person, because for me, it becomes old hat. If somebody, Roland, was fascinated with the idea of becoming a teacher and wanted to see what it was like in the classroom setting, and they wanted to observe you for a day to see how you did what you did, and even how you organized your supplies or organized your day or whatever that case may be, it would probably feel a little bit strange to you, because for you, it's just what you do every day. Mm-hmm. You go in and you perform that function. And truly, that's how it feels for me. I've been doing this long enough that there are no nerves anymore when a microphone goes on. It's just a microphone goes on and away you go. And you get used to, and in some cases, I'll admit, spoiled by. We recently, within the last year, moved into brand new radio studios here in Kitchener. And they are some of the best I've ever worked in. But they're already now to the point where I just walk into them every day and I recognize this is my place of work. But for somebody that has seen them for the first time, there is a whole lot of magic associated with it. And sometimes I have to step back and recognize that from another person's perspective. And so I'm not trying to say that I'm jaded or cynical. I've just grown accustomed to that's the world I exist in. And again, I'll go back to what I said earlier. I know that I'm very fortunate to be in it.
Right. And I get what you're saying. When people want to come to my room or people connect with me about teaching teacher stuff, I'm very honored. And yeah, I'm just like, really, you want to talk to me? Even though I just go in and I do my thing every day. So I do get your perspective. I think it's kind of neat though, because your voice is so widespread all over the place. Whereas my job is more, it's in like, you know, it's within four walls. And unless I'm on YouTube or Twitter, that's where it stays. But I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I don't even think about it. I never even, as strange as it sounds, I never think about even a single person listening. And then when I get a response to something I said, I'm like, oh, okay, I did say that. And yeah, I guess you listened to it. But it always still kind of catches me for half a second.
Mm-hmm. I guess that's part of your magic, Mike. That's what I would say. Let's talk for a second about Farwell for Hire. In support of cystic fibrosis research. I would love it if you explained a little bit about what you're doing and why you're doing it.
You know, it's funny. Here we are on May the 5th, and this campaign, as you've said, Farwell for Hire, runs for the month of May. May is Cystic Fibrosis Awareness Month. And just before I get into the sort of backgrounds of this campaign and how it came to be, as I said, this is May the 5th, and I believe it's the third time now, maybe the fourth, that I've been asked about this campaign. And I've got to, maybe this year when it's done, I've got to go back and find the tweet that started it all, because this truly was an accident. So I'll explain the accident in a moment. But the reason that the campaign means so much to me and cystic fibrosis means so much to me is because two of my sisters had cystic fibrosis. And yes, I'm using had in the past tense. It's not that you can get rid of cystic fibrosis. It's that, well, cystic fibrosis gets rid of you. So it's a fatal genetic disease that affects the lungs and digestive system. So people who have cystic fibrosis, and they are born with it, it's not contagious. You can't catch it from somebody else. You are born with this affliction. They take a handful of enzymes, or what I like to call pills, little tablet pills, with every meal to help them digest. And they do a series of treatments every day to keep the mucus from building up in their lungs. But eventually that does build up to the point that the person with cystic fibrosis can no longer breathe. And then of course we know what the end result is. So my sisters passed away just 9 months apart in September of 1993. I lost my older sister, Luann. She was 24 when she died. And 9 months later in June of 1994, we lost the youngest in our family, Sherry, and she was just 18 when she died of cystic fibrosis. So we were a family of five. Now we're a family of three. I still have an older brother and a younger sister, and I'm right in the middle. And this was our life. This is kind of just what we got accustomed to experiencing on a day-to-day basis, watching my sister take these enzymes, watching my sister go through their treatments, listening to my sister's cough. There is a very distinct cough that goes with cystic fibrosis, and I can still identify it if I hear it. It's distinct enough, and I've heard it so many times, I know what a cystic fibrosis or a CF cough sounds like. And so because of them, and in their memory, I fundraise each and every year. Cystic Fibrosis Canada, on the last Sunday in May, will hold its big walk, like any other charity, do a fundraising walk. It'll happen from coast to coast, and we always do ours here in the region of Waterloo. And I was like everybody else many, many years ago. I'd send out emails to friends and family. I'd knock on a few doors and ask for sponsorship. Will you donate to the walk? Will you help me out? And I might raise $1,000, you know, 800, 900,000. And then after a while, I thought, okay, I've got to try to generate more. What can I do next? And so then I started doing stunts. I sat the dunk tank in a public square. I stepped in the ring against the world champion. I jumped out of an airplane. I did some stuff like that. And then that kind of seemed to run out of steam, or I couldn't think of anything else to do. And then I kind of got this idea in the back of my mind. And the idea was really born out of my dislike for asking things. It really did. As generous as they always were, Roland, I would, every year I'd cringe just a little bit when I'm saying, can you sponsor me again? Can you donate again? And so I thought, what if I did something for them in return for their donation? And I kind of had this germinating in the back of my mind after the walk the 1 year. And finally, it was April the 30th, 2014, the day before May, and I threw out a tweet on my Twitter feed. And again, I'm going to go back and find it someday to see exactly what it said, but it had the hashtag Farwell, the number four hire, and the campaign was born. And I thought, if I could make $10,000 in that first year of doing it, I'd be over the moon. And the concept was really simple. I will do a job for you. I will mow your lawn. I will rake your leaves. I will weed your garden. I will wash your car. And in exchange for that, you give me a donation to cystic fibrosis. And in the first year, we went over $20,000 in the campaign. And I realized that the idea had clicked. The idea had resonated with people. And so we've been doing it ever since.
That's awesome. And how many years have you been doing this for?
This is the beginning now of year number four. So in that first year, we made just over $20,000. In the second year, we made $28,000. And last year, in year number three, we made over $47,000 just in the month of... Well, we stretched it a little bit. We went into a little bit of June last year. But in about 31 days, we managed to make that kind of money.
That's amazing. So how do you feel... How do you feel making that kind of money, giving up so much of your time for others, and then, you know, in exchange, making a donation? That you must be over the moon.
I am, but it's not even so much about the money. Although I truly believe in the value of the fundraising, because one of the things that makes me very proud of working and volunteering on behalf of cystic fibrosis is that the money raised through fundraising gets like almost dollar for dollar right into research. There's very little overhead associated with cystic fibrosis. And then that research in turn, much of it, the very best research is being done right here in Canada, which again makes me super proud. So yes, the money is important. But do you know what gets me each and every year is the response from the community for this campaign. And that's what I love. People rally around this. For whatever reason, it has struck a chord. And when we launched again this year at the beginning of May, and it's largely driven through social media, people were saying, Farwell for Hire is my favorite time of the year. I've been waiting 11 months for this. Like they look forward to it now. And it's, that's what means even more to me, is that this community just gets behind this cause and goes for it.
I think it goes back to who you are and what you do for the community when you're not, when this isn't happening. That's my belief. I think that it just, like I said earlier, and I'm going to say it again, it's who you are. It's your voice. It's the way you treat people when they interact with you. It's positive. You know what? I would love to hear from somebody who's dealt with you in a negative way. I doubt there's anybody public that will say that. I'm sure your family probably has a lot to say, but that's a whole other world, right? But that's what I think, and good for you. And I hear what you're saying. It's not about the money, but I mean, like you said, that money. The more you can make, the more money goes into the research, the more that they can do. And so, I think it's fantastic. I think it's what you got going on is pretty cool. You know, I want to ask, like, how much of your free time does get sucked up? Like, is May just totally you go to work and then you're just out and about doing things for people?
Absolutely. All of my free time is devoted to this campaign. And I'm okay with that. That's not a complaint. That's a reality. And I am, again, I'll go back to how fortunate I am to be doing the job that I do. So I do a morning radio show that goes from 5 until 10. And don't get me wrong, people assume that those of us who are in broadcasting and do morning shows like this, some of them are only 4 hours long. Oh, you only work 4 hours a day. No, there is actually more that goes on besides those 5 hours that I'm on the air. But in the month of May, it's kept pretty tight to just those 5 hours because my employer, Rogers Communications, is very generous to me in allowing me to get out of the station as quickly as possible, as soon as my show is done, so I can get to work, in air quotes, on the campaign. So I'm very fortunate in that regard. And I'm further fortunate insofar as the radio station allowing me to talk about this campaign until I'm blue in the face. And it's been great because that raises exposure. It raises awareness for the cause and it keeps me busy for the month. But truly, it's a matter of leaving the radio station and going to point A, then to point B, and then to point C during the day to collect, to do a job, to collect a donation, and to raise money for cystic fibrosis.
I'm really happy to hear that they're cooperative and supportive. I think anybody who's listening would feel the same. Good on them for supporting the community and helping you do what you need to do. Have you done any other work for Cystic Fibrosis Canada aside from the Farwell for Hire campaign? Like, is there another way that you're involved with them when you're not doing this?
Not formally. Okay. When I look back at my time with cystic fibrosis and locally here, our KW chapter for it, I've been a volunteer for well over a decade now. But in the beginning, it was merely attending board meetings and doing some MC work. And of course, being a part of the walk every year and things like that. But my involvement has grown, I guess, to a focus on just this campaign. And one of the great outcomes of that has been people's association now with me and cystic fibrosis. So again, while I may not formally be doing anything else from June until the next April, I am associated with cystic fibrosis. Therefore, if anything cystic fibrosis related is happening in our community, I get involved. Whether it's to help find an auction prize, to MC an event, to promote something that's coming up, things like that.
Okay. I have to ask, if you had the opportunity to do any other kind of work, what would it be?
Oh my, that is an excellent question.
We can come back to it later if nothing's coming to mind.
It gives me pause for thought. Again, I feel as though I'm so fortunate to be living the dream when it comes to what I do. But I think if I did do anything else, it would certainly be community based. I would work for a nonprofit or a charity. That kind of thing, because that's kind of what gets my juices flowing, and really it's that sort of work excites me. So that's kind of where I could see myself.
Okay, I have another interesting question. So my podcast has no rules, and so there are certain questions I ask, and then depending on the person I'm talking to, certain things will come up. And one question I like to ask my guests in this day and age is, do you remember the first time you used the internet?
You know what? I think so. Because it's connected to my very first radio job, my first full-time radio job, I was hired out in a place called Salmon Arm, British Columbia, a small little town out in BC. And the internet was kind of just becoming a thing. And I remember that because as broadcasters, we were very afraid that it was going to change everything about our industry and it's going to hurt us and this and that. But I remember we had a little office for the announcers and I would go in there during my shift and dial in to the internet. And I remember the sound of the modem clearly. And I was always nervous doing it because I didn't know exactly what I was doing and where I was going on this thing called the internet. But I'm pretty sure, and that would have been in 1996. And that I think pretty much jives with the emergence, really, of the World Wide Web.
Yeah, I would agree, because I learned about it in 1995. So around that time, I think we were all starting to get into it and hear that modem sound, right? When you were in university and college, first of all, did your university or college have a radio station? I'm assuming Conestoga did because it had a program, but were you on the radio in university or college?
I was in college. The University of Waterloo, where I attended, also had and still has CKMS when I was in college, and it's changed since I left. But when I was there, we had a closed circuit radio station that broadcast only to the student lounge and to the cafeteria. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, the college has grown and expanded with the times, and it has an actual on-air signal that students are learning on, but also broadcasting to a much broader audience in the community. But yes, I wanted to, from the very beginning of the program, it was a 3-year program for both radio and television. You took 2 years of general for both, and in the third year, you specialized in one or the other. And I went in with a singular focus of being on the air in radio. And when that mm-hmm. third year came along, we were a class of about 30. I think there were 28. And 22 people went into TV, and 6 of us went into radio, and I was one of them.
Cool. Now, I know this month you don't have a lot of time for yourself or for leisure, but when you're not in the middle of May, what do you like to do for fun?
One of my absolute favorite pastimes is motorcycling. So that, of course, is a seasonal pastime, but when winter's around and the hockey season is here, that keeps me so busy that there's not as much time as you would like. But I thoroughly enjoy motorcycling. When I can, playing cards. I've got a regular get together with some friends from college, actually, where we get together for a card game. And I have a delightful girlfriend who's got a young daughter who is just the apple of my eye, and we spend as much time goofing off as we humanly can.
Okay, I have to. When you say motorcycle, I have to ask, what did your mom think of that when you decided to get a motorcycle?
Well, I got my motorcycle when I was in my 30s, because when I was a kid, my mother made it abundantly clear that nobody was going to ride one of those things when we were younger. And then as I moved on and got into school and the associated costs, and then radio and the very, very poor pay. I'll tell you, I'm not shy about saying it. My very first radio job, that full-time job, and I mentioned that was 1996, I got paid the princely sum of $17,200 a year. So,
wow.
Yeah, that's not a lot of money. So I didn't have much disposable income. So it wasn't until many, many years later where I had sort of settled into my career and had enough on the side that I thought I can afford a toy. And that's when I started motorcycling. But I can also tell you that to this day, Mom is not fond of the fact that I ride a motorcycle.
Mm-hmm. Many moms feel that way. I have a brother who's 8 years younger than me. So he's in his 30s. And every now and again on his Instagram account, I'll see a beautiful bicycle, a motorcycle. And I'll text him and say, hey, is that yours? Did you finally get one? He's like, no, Mom's still on my case. And so it never ends. I understand what you're saying. Now, thankfully, my wife is not 100% against motorcycles, so I think I could probably own one Attaboy. One day without too much grief from my wife, but my mom will still be on me. I got two more questions for you, then I'm going to let you go and get some rest so that you can wake up tomorrow and do your thing. On your Twitter site, right now, your profile picture is the Farwell for Hire. I want to call it a cartoon or brand. I'm not sure what to refer to it as, but it's a cartoonish picture of you. Do you have any swag? Like, are you making hats or t-shirts or anything?
As a matter of fact, yes. They just got finished or picked up today. And this is the first time ever. I mean, it kind of speaks to the whole notion of this campaign, picking up momentum and snowballing. And I mean, I never in my wildest dream that it would turn into what it has turned into, but here we are. So yes, there will be t-shirts with that very logo you're talking about. So my Twitter profile is Farwell, F-A-R-W-E-L-L underscore W-R for Waterloo Region. And that little caricature, likeness, whatever you want to call it, as my avatar right now, is the same image you'll see on the t-shirt. And it says, Farwell for Hire, finding a cure for cystic fibrosis, one odd job at a time.
Awesome. I will make sure that that picture goes on the blog for this podcast.
And yeah, that'll be on the t-shirt.
And I'll make... Awesome. Yeah. And so will you tweet out information about how people can get one
Absolutely.
If they're interested?
I'll make sure that happens. You got it.
Okay, so we'll make sure that that's on the blog for anybody who hears the podcast can go to the blog site and be able to see the picture and kind of connect with you. If people want to connect with you, is the best way to do it through Twitter?
Sure. Twitter, Facebook, email, Farwell4Hire@gmail.com works. I'm wide open and accessible. If you go to country1067.com and look up the morning show, you'll find my email address right there as well. I mean, any way that somebody is interested in reaching out, I'm more than happy to talk.
Excellent. So the last thing I want to ask you is a question that I ask of almost all my guests on the podcast. And again, it goes back to motivation and inspiration. So we heard what generally motivates you. We heard about what motivates you and inspires you to participate in the Farwell for Hire campaign in the month of May to support cystic fibrosis research. And so I want to know, now I know people come up to you in the community, and I would love to know if somebody came up to you at the rink or whatever and you know, started talking to you and said to you, you know, Mike, I'm just not feeling motivated, like generally. What kind of advice might you offer them if they put you on the spot and they're like, I'm not feeling motivated or inspired? What might you say to that person to help them find motivation or inspiration?
I believe rightly or wrongly, and again, take this for what it's worth. I don't claim to be an expert, but I believe motivation, or perhaps maybe I should say the best motivation, are intrinsic. So like I told you earlier, that I don't do what I do for a living because of the paycheck every second Friday. That's extrinsic motivation. And I'm not saying I don't do my job for that because it's extrinsic motivation. It's just that doesn't motivate me. Well, motivation comes from within. So I would advise that individual. I might try to find out why it is they're lacking in motivation. If they've already identified that they are lacking in motivation, I think you've got something to work with. So maybe get into the whys of that. Is it in their career? And believe you me, at this stage of my life, I will tell anybody to stop doing what they're doing if it's making them unhappy. And do what you love. Life is too short to not do what you love. I don't care if you're getting six figures or eight figures at a job. If doing what you love is a mere little five figures, then that's what you should do. I firmly, firmly believe that. And I might point somebody in the direction of a book or something. Believe it or not, one of my kind of light bulb moments, as I call them, when that light bulb lit up above my head, came from reading a biography of Roberto Clemente. I was interested in the book because I was interested in baseball, and I wanted to learn more about one of the greatest Latin American players to ever play the game. And it's only when I read that book that I found out that Roberto Clemente was more than an all-star baseball player for the Pittsburgh Pirates, but he was also a great humanitarian. And there was a quote that said from Roberto Clemente when he said, "A person who has the ability to help others and fails to do so has wasted their life." And it just gave me... Again, I thought about all really Roberto Clemente had to do was play baseball. That's what he was doing. Mm-hmm. But he wanted and desired for more. And that was a real kind of turning point in my perspective, my outlook on life. And I found it extremely motivating. So maybe you could find your own motivation within the pages of the book. But I would I would primarily focus on my former point, and that is, if the lack of motivation is coming from a part of your life that you have the ability to change, then change.
Thank you for that, Mike. I appreciate it, and I'm sure my listeners appreciate it as well. I've been fortunate enough to be able to collect from my guests their thoughts and opinions about that. And every time I hear somebody's response, it's always awesome for me because, you know, in my day-to-day work, I don't get a chance to pull people over and say, hey, you know, what motivates and inspires you? And then the follow-up question, what would you say to somebody to motivate them? So it's really cool that I get to do that and that people like you get to answer that question and provide us, the listeners, with an idea of where you're coming from. So thank you for that. It's been really awesome to have you on the podcast, and I look forward to having people hear it and to hear about what you're doing for the month of May, and perhaps they can assist and they can help out, because like you said, every little bit counts, every little bit helps. And so I'm hoping that that people will hear your story and decide that it's something that they want to support. So thank you again for that. And please do tell your family when you see them that I say hello. Hopefully they still remember who I am. If not, you can just say it's that Middle Eastern guy with the big beard. Remember him? And that might jog something in their memory.
Where is it you're from originally?
I'm from Ottawa originally. I was born and raised in Ottawa, but my parents came over to Canada from Lebanon.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. So, and it's been they picked the right country, in my opinion.
Oh, I think they did too, but I'm biased.
Okay. Well, you enjoy the rest of your evening, and we'll be in touch soon.
I'll definitely pass along those greetings to my family. Thank you very much, Roland.